This morning, we'll be taking your questions on things that grow in the home landscape, lawn and garden care. This is a topic that we feature on the program monthly, spring, summer, early fall. And our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. So if you have questions here, it can be things like lawn, trees, shrubs, things that flower, stuff you can eat, house plants, any and all of that kind of stuff. If you have a problem, you need some advice, just give us a call. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You got questions? Give us a call. Well, thank you once again for being
here. Good morning. On this lovely morning.
It is pretty nice, isn't it? We were just chatting here before we got going about how unusually pleasant this is for the August, the whatever it is, the 10th, for it to be. It's now 68. I was walking in this morning to work and thinking, man, you're not going to get better than this. This is really good.
I know. Which has really been good for gardening and for horticulture. A lot of the plants are really normally be all dried up and, you know, on their way out kind of thing. Are really still hanging in there and looking good. And even the grass is continuing to grow, which I've had a few people complain that they like to, you know, like quit mowing in July and August. But, oh, well, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Okay. We have a couple of people already ready to go. So let's talk with them. Starting in Urbana. That's line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, how do you get rid of Creeping Charlie?
Boy, that is like the number one question. I wish I had a really good answer for you. I assume, is this in your lawn?
It's a lawn, right.
It's in your lawn. Actually, we're getting into a pretty good time here. If you want to go ahead and use, usually the herbicides are about the only thing that's really going to get rid of it, unless you really want to try and dig it up, which is just about impossible. But if you're persistent, you could do that. And as we get into, actually, even into September and October, you can use really the broadleaf type herbicides, things that you use for dandelions and stuff. Does a pretty good job, but then you have to repeat it. So as soon as it says you can repeat application, usually it's like within 6 to 8 weeks, then repeat the application. So read the label, see what it says, and then make sure you repeat that application. One application isn't going to do it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right,
good luck.
Thank you. Piatt County next, line number four.
Right, hello. Here.
Yes, hello.
I have a question, first of all, about mums at this time of year that you buy just in pots, like at Lowe's or something.
Mm-hmm.
Will they just keep blooming in the pots, or do you have to transplant them or into a bigger pot or the ground?
So they're already blooming right now, and you just want to, well, you don't necessarily have to plant them in the ground. I think the one thing, are you wanting these to live year after year?
Well, I've given up on that, actually.
That's why I asked. There's a lot of people that
would like them to, but they never seem to, so I just kind of consider them an annual.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, but I will give you a couple tips. If you do, they do tend to do better if you are planning on to keep them over the winter, is if you plant them early. Don't wait until October, November to plant them. So plant them in, you know, even now through September, and so they get somewhat established before we get into the cold weather. I think that's often the problem, that, you know, they're looking good, or we're decorating with them, and then, you know, there's a cold spell, and then we, you know, zap them in the ground, expect them to live sometimes. So that would be one thing.
Or anything?
Pardon?
Do you fertilize them now, or are that...
I really wouldn't, especially when they're starting to get a flower, I really wouldn't worry too much about fertilizing them. The other thing about getting them through the winter time is to make sure they're in well-drained soil.
Okay.
They have to be in well-drained soil.
Okay.
I think that's the one thing that will take them out anytime. So, and even if you can kind of just kind of plant them even on a semi-mound, like just make a little mound of soil and actually plant them up a little bit, sometimes that's enough to give them a little extra drainage.
Okay, I'll try that. And I have another question about, speaking of planting, is it too early to move some things for fall? I mean, considering we probably will have some more hot weather, like daylilies and, you know, do some fall transplanting?
Right. Normally, we'd probably say September.
Okay.
Because you're absolutely right. We certainly still could get into some hot weather, although it looks like the next week or so is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But as it starts to get toward the end of August and then certainly through September, that's a great time to move things. Daylilies, I will tell you, you can just about move any time. I think you could move them in December and they'd still live. So.
Okay. Well, my last question then concerns, I have a lace cap hydrangea that this year has gone berserk. And it's huge, and I never know, and I haven't been able to research adequately, when do I cut it back, because does it grow on new wood or old wood? Or
Yeah, most of those are actually going to be blooming on old wood. Mm-hmm. So when you want to prune them is actually after they flower. So about now or so.
Okay.
Once you kind of get tired of the way the flower heads look, then go ahead and prune them.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay. Thanks for the call. You know, a couple of years ago, I planted 4 mom plants. Mm-hmm. 2 of them were white. And then 2 of them were kind of orange. And I guess I thought when I bought them, I was buying the same variety. And I think it turned out that, in fact, those were 2 different plants. Mm-hmm. And the first winter, one of the orange ones didn't make it. Then the next winter, another of the orange ones didn't make it. So those guys didn't make it. But the other ones are still alive. Yeah. And I guess I always wondered, well, they were all planted in the same, basically in the same place, so the conditions couldn't have been all that different. Right. It must have been maybe something about the variety,
and
ones were more hardy than the others.
Right, and you're absolutely right. You know, as they do more hybridization, sometimes, you know, trying to get different colors or different shapes or sizes of flowers, sometimes I think there's a little bit of a problem with actually breeding out a little bit of the hardiness. Mm-hmm. So part of that may not really be our problem. It may be just the fact that through breeding, they've kind of lost some of the hardiness. But generally, so you may have to just find that variety that works well for you. And it seems like the small button type, the smaller ones, I don't know what yours look like, but it seems like the smaller button type tend to be the ones that will hang in there longer from what I've seen.
Yeah. Well, I think that they were all kind of like that. I mean, the flowers weren't terribly big.
Yeah. The small flowers usually winter over better.
So it's just a matter of sort of trial and error, finding which varieties really will overwinter and which won't.
Or find somebody who's actually growing them, field growing them. And sometimes you can find that. I'm not sure if the pumpkin patch, I know they always have lots of mums, but I'm not sure if they field grow those. But if you can find somebody who's actually field growing them and actually where they're planting them out and they're keeping them through the winter and that kind of thing, usually you can have much better success with those.
Okay. Sandy Mason is with us. She's here once a month in spring, summer, early fall. We talk about lawn and garden care. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And the lines are full, so we'll get right back to the folks here who are listening and calling. Champaign caller next, line number 2.
Hi.
Hi.
I planted some bulbs for elephant ears, and they worked well. They grew, you know, crazy and everything. And I planted some in the yard, and I left some in a pot. But one thing I noticed about all of them is that they aren't getting as tall as I thought they would, for one. Plus, when they grow leaves, and then it's like a leaf will start turning brown and yellow and, you know, die. Mm-hmm. And so this is a continual thing. It's like it's dying and living at the same time. And I was just wondering if there's anything I could do to stop this process, because it's really kind of frustrating.
Yeah, I'll bet it is. Does it seem to be a difference between whether they're the ones in the ground or the ones in the containers? As to the ones, are they both doing it?
Really. Not really. It's about the same. That's, you know.
I guess what I was wondering about with the elephant ears, they really don't like to dry out. And so even if they dry out even just a little bit, sometimes they'll get some of the yellowing leaves. So I'd wonder about two things, either really too wet, although they take quite a bit of moisture, either too wet or too dry.
Mm-hmm.
And those would be the things I'd wonder about. That's why I was asking. Usually containers tend to dry out faster, and so sometimes we have trouble with those.
We're good about keeping our plants moist, even if it's not raining, we water. So
Well, you might even what I would wonder also just about the bulb itself. You might even just pop one out of the pot and kind of look at the roots and see what's going on. See if maybe the roots are rotting back for one reason or another, or maybe the bulb itself seems to have a little rot in it.
Mm-hmm.
I would really trace it maybe back to that to see what's going on there. And was this the first year you had these, or
have you had them?
Yeah. And the one thing about elephant ears, as with a lot of bulbs, is as they get bigger, as bulbs get bigger, then the plants get bigger. So you may have seen, maybe in other places where they actually had a very large bulb, and that's why the plant was so tall. So I would just give them some time. That's why it's good to keep those year after year, because the bulb keeps getting bigger. And
okay, so it could just be something that's just going on now, but in time it'll correct yourself.
Right. Certainly the height thing. I think you'll find the leaves will get bigger and they'll get much taller as the bulbs get bigger.
Okay.
So you just need to sort of get them. And as you know, they're not hardy, so you're going to have to, bring them in for the winter time.
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh.
No.
guess what?
Yeah. Also, I noticed sort of this, I got a corn plant that someone had kind of abuse because I guess they really kind of wanted it to die, so we kind of got it. And
plant abuse.
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of noticed sort of the same kind of thing with the some of the leaves or whatever you call them on those plants.
Yeah, you might even try fertilizing even.
I don't know.
Do you fertilize them?
Yeah, we did. And, you know, we put, you know, replanted in a big pot and new soil, roots, starter, and all that good stuff. And it's doing okay. As a matter of fact, another one seems to be actually growing up out of there.
Oh, could be.
And so that'll be interesting. But anyway, so you can't.
Well, I guess I would wonder about a couple things on those. Those corn plants sometimes can get some leaf disease problems, or actually sometimes they can have problems with the water. I assume they're probably, are they outside or inside?
No, it's inside.
It's inside.
I tried outside and the wind blew.
Yeah, probably. But sometimes they actually have a problem if there's a high pH soil, water, or if you're using water softener. Sometimes there's some problems with those on those plants, I will tell you, and then the outside edges tend to brown up a little bit, usually because of chlorine and stuff. So you may try actually, you know, if you can get a rain barrel or something where you get rainwater or something like that, or if you have a spigot outside that doesn't go through the water softener, that might help a little bit too.
Okay.
So I would just try that. But you're a good person for taking in an abused plant. I appreciate that.
All right, then.
Good
thank
luck.
You.
All right,
bye.
Thanks for the call. Let's go next to the someone here in Mattoon, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there's anything that we can do at this time of the year to deal with crabgrass. I know last month when you were on, you addressed it briefly, and you talked about importance of not cutting the lawn too short and to make sure that the rest of the grass is healthy and not full of thatch. And I do all that, and I put down a commercial fertilizer product that's supposed to battle the crabgrass, and I put it down in the early morning when the grass was still real wet with dew, like it said to do. And the crabgrass is just thriving, and now it's going from one patch where I'm getting little things popping up in different parts of the yard, and I'm just wondering if you got anything else that I can do.
Is there any good grass among the crabgrass, or it's just all...
No, where the crabgrass is coming up, it really seems to be pushing everything else out.
Yeah. I think what I would try, this is full sun, I take it, or...
Yeah,
pretty much full sun. Okay. I think what I would probably do, this is a good time of year to think about actually reseeding areas. We're getting in usually through, you know, mid-August through mid-September is really a good time. And it looks like we're going to have great weather for the next week or so. So I would think about either you can go ahead and, you know, just crabgrass comes up fairly easily if you want to just hoe it out. Or if there's lots of it, you could use a non-selective herbicide like glyphosate, sold as Roundup, Cleanup, those kinds of things, and just kill off the crabgrass, and then just immediately go ahead, once it dies, then you can go ahead and reseed those areas.
Okay.
And get some good grass going in there and try to fill in those spaces, and then maybe the crabgrass won't grow quite so readily.
Okay.
So that would be one thing I would wonder about.
Okay, but this is a decent time to try and get something like that.
Yeah, I would go with some grass seed. I think it's a great time to be doing that kind of thing and thickening up some areas, either with Kentucky bluegrass. Usually Kentucky bluegrass and ryegrass mixes are pretty good for that. So
for full sun.
Right, and then for next spring, depending on when you put that on, you know, you really have to put it on fairly early. So I don't know when you put the preventative on.
No, just a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. That's why it's still doing its thing, because it's a preventative. It's really what we normally do with crabgrass, since it's an annual grass. We put down an herbicide that keeps it from the seeds from actually emerging. So normally we do that, you know, really we're talking about April, mid to late April to do that. So you might put that on your calendar for next year.
If I want to go digging it out, how thoroughly do I have to get the root systems out?
Yeah, they don't really come up real well from the roots themselves. So they're pretty easy to dig up or pull up, to tell you the truth. So usually you can do that with a hoe fairly easily.
All righty. Thank you.
Yeah, good
luck.
Thanks
for the call.
Bye.
Let's go next to Champagne, and this will be line number three. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi. I had two questions. The first is, it sort of plays off the last person. I'm putting in a new lawn, and we're spreading out some black dirt to put that on top of. What would be a good thickness of black dirt to plant on? Do you have any tips for a new lawn going in? Fertilization, grass type, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What's underneath the black dirt?
Clay.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Clay.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what what should happen. Now, whether you want to go to that much effort or not, I don't know. Really, the whole idea is you need to till that in rather than just having this little layer. Now, if you could actually put down a layer of topsoil that's maybe 8 to 10 inches, I'd say don't worry about it necessarily tilling it up. But if you're just putting on just a thin layer of black soil, it's probably not going to help the grass all that much, to be honest with you, because it'll probably start to root in that top inch or so rather than, you know, hitting into the clay, and that's not what you want to have happen.
Well, I mean, I was looking at putting in at least like 4 inches, if not more than that, if I can. It's not that easy to get a lot of good topsoil.
Right, I know. That's why, and I know there's certainly an expense and effort to do that kind of thing, but we probably normally, if you're just adding a few inches, we normally would say to till that up and to mix it in so you have a nice mixture rather than just having these two separate layers. Tends to be a little bit harder to keep it well watered and all that kind of stuff because the grass will just hang out in that top surface, and that's not where you want it.
What about tilling in a layer and then dumping even more on top of that?
You certainly could do that, and then at least that's a little bit better where you don't have these very distinct layers. When you get these distinct layers, that's when you generally have problems.
Okay. So, what about fertilizing new seed and all that? Should I worry about that?
Well, you certainly can put down a fertilizer at the same time as seeding. We actually have some pretty nice information at the Extension office that has these fact sheets on how to take care of your lawn, how to renovate your lawn. And folks can check with their local Extension office, and we have lots of good info. And I think that's one thing. You need to make sure that you have the proper rates, you know, make sure you put down the proper amount of seed to make sure you have a nice lush lawn. You don't want it to get real tall as soon as it's ready to be mowed. You need to mow it. A lot of times people make the mistake. They think if they let it get to 5 to 6 inches that that's good for a new lawn, but it's not. You really don't want it to get that tall. So those are probably some of the things. And keeping it well-watered is going to be your biggest battle if you're doing seed.
Where's your office?
We're at 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign on the west end of town.
Okay. And also going back 2 calls ago, the one with the elephant ears, we plant them directly in the ground. How do you prepare them for overwintering?
You just need to dig them up before it gets real cold, usually probably 1st of October or so before we really have a killing frost. You just dig them up, and you basically just need to put them somewhere where they're going to stay fairly cool. If you have a basement or crawl space, you just don't want them to freeze.
Should you whack off the tops?
Yeah, you just cut off the tops.
And
then actually that'll start to sort of decompose. And then just kind of, you know, put them in a nice spot where they're not going to get too hot or too cold.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Next, we have someone in Lafayette, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Can you confirm me in my impression here that spraying of weeds is best done in the high flush of spring growth, or when cooler weather arrives in fall?
If you're talking about perennial type weeds, really you can do it in the fall. And actually, we really get pretty good success in the fall. And in the fall, I'm talking about, you know, mid to late September into October. And really have found that it's a very good time to do a lot of the perennial weed control problems in our lawn, especially things like Creeping Charlie or dandelions or, you know, violets, some of those things that we have a problem with because they are perennial. So you're right that it's great in the springtime because when it is night, they're growing well and they tend to take the herbicide in well. But I wouldn't give up on just because we're later on in the season.
Okay. After applying this and the herbicide, and the ground, I suppose, is rather poisonous, how does seeding fit in? When can you do it?
You really need to check with whatever herbicide that you're using because they'll tell you how, you know, when you can seed. They'll go ahead and tell you things like for a lot of them, it may be just a matter of a few weeks. For things like glyphosate, it actually, as soon as the weed dies, you can replant. Really, most of the herbicides that we see are either decomposed fairly quickly or they're bound up by the organic matter. So for most of the herbicides, again, read the label because there will be a little bit of variance there.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, mm-hmm. Thanks. If you do want to go ahead and do some of that kind of treatment and maybe combine it with doing a fertilization, it seems to me the easiest thing to do is to go out and get a product that does both those things, mm-hmm. something that's a dry, granular deal, and then you have to have a spreader, and you just walk back and forth and you lay the stuff out, and the thing you just have to make sure is that it gets watered in somehow. Either you water it or it rains, right?
Right, so however it is on the label.
However it is on the label. Are most of those products, those sort of all-purpose things, that are intended to do both those things, try to give you some weed control and fertilizer, is that going to give you pretty good control on both of those?
Yeah, it's one of those things that the timing isn't always exactly right. So you are giving up a little bit on, because when you decide to fertilize may not really be the time you want to necessarily be doing weed control or vice versa. So sometimes we're giving up a little bit on that. But for most people and for convenience, it's probably the thing that works out best for them. And this time of year, as we get into the cooler part of the season, September is one of the most important times to be fertilizing your lawn. If you're only going to fertilize once, September is the time to do it. So that's also not a bad time to be taking care of some of these perennial weeds, so things like dandelion. So using it in September really would probably work out well for most people. So it probably is in the springtime where we have a little bit more problem with it because of we generally recommend that you don't fertilize until May, but people want to put on weed control or need to put on weed control perhaps in April or even in March, depending on what weeds they have. So sometimes we're kind of giving up a little bit on what we might consider ideal.
All right. Let's see. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign in line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. A friend of mine had suggested that late summer was a good time to buy rhododendrons, but not to plant them till fall. And I'm just wondering if this is late enough in the summer and too early to try to plant buy and plant rhododendron, or should I wait until September?
Well, I guess I would have a couple comments, and rhododendrons are a little bit more tricky in our area simply because we just don't have the acidic soil for them. They need an acidic soil. What I would recommend would be, if you're really planning on planting rhododendrons, is like right now, I would start adding sulfur, something that's going to actually reduce the pH in the soil, and I would do that now, even before I'm going to plant. Mm-hmm. Because that stuff doesn't react immediately. So you need to give it time to sort of react within the soil. So I would think about early, going ahead and preparing the bed, adding organic matter. Ideally, it'd be nice to get a soil test to see how much sulfur you need to add. Mm-hmm. Those kind of things I do right now.
I see.
And then if you do want to plant, perhaps in September, I would probably be more inclined to wait till spring, to be honest with you.
Oh.
That way that, there's some concern about getting them established before we get into winter. But, if you're going for the deals, sometimes things are on sale, then perhaps you want to go with a September planting.
Mm-hmm. But it's really smarter to just wait till spring.
But I would, I would prepare the soil now, though.
Uh-huh.
I would prepare the soil, let it mellow over the winter time, and then next spring it'll be ready to go, and then you can go ahead and plant right away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that would be what, March, April?
Probably around the 1st of April. It's a good time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. And let's see. We'll go next to Chicago, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
When you have a plant that dies in a pot and you have that soil left over, is it worthwhile to use that soil for another plant, or do you throw it out and replace it?
Well, it depends on why the plant died. If you know that it truly was, you just plain old forgot to water it and it sort of just dried up and, kind of did its thing that way, then I probably wouldn't be too upset about or too concerned about using the soil. But if you're not quite sure, or especially if maybe you overwatered it and it got some root rot problems, which means there's a fungus that's doing a pretty good job in there, then I'd be concerned about reusing it. And you can actually pasteurize soil if you want to reuse it. You need to get it to about 180 degrees for about 30 minutes. And I've seen people put it on their, outside grill. It has a very interesting aroma. So you may not want to do it indoors, or you have to have a very, very understanding spouse. But you can pasteurize it if you want to.
The potting soil you buy in a supermarket, that's okay. Otherwise, to replant something? Or is that just so-so?
Well, depending on what kind of potting soil you get, some of them, the real cheap ones, I have some problems with because they tend to have lots of soil in them, but they don't have a lot of the amendments that we really need for container soils, things like perlite, vermiculite, those things that sort of loosen up the soil. So I think with potting soil, you're better off, going with a little higher brand, spending a little bit more money, or buying the vermiculite and mixing it yourself, or perlite and adding it to that potting soil. So the quality of the soil is one issue there, but certainly, again, depending on why the plant died, whether you could reuse it or not, it certainly can be reused.
Is there any merit to adding eggshells or coffee grounds? I hear that.
I hear a lot of people, you know, really find that that's very helpful, and they seem to think that their plants do quite well. And there have actually been some studies, and people have sort of looked at it, and there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of things that are actually coming from, you know, either the eggshells or the coffee grounds or whatever. Probably what's happening is that maybe they're actually paying more attention to the plant, and so actually it's maybe thriving because of that. So I think the jury is still out on the whole eggshell thing, but I certainly have had a lot of people say that they swear by it. So.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Earlier in the summer, Mrs. Inch and I were in the Starbucks one day, and they were giving away coffee grounds. They had packaged them up. And I think actually this was a sneaky way to get people to take away the coffee grounds that they have plenty of. But that's the way they were selling it, I think, actually, as fertilizer. And this we used it in our quest to try to drive the rabbits away.
Did it work?
Well, no, I'm not sure. It did give the garden a delightful coffee scent, though.
I would like that.
Which was
that
much better than this stuff that I had bought that smelled like mothballs.
Ooh,
that
yeah,
was really bad.
I would
never use that again. Because I figured, you know, I was looking for something and I got this stuff and it was supposed to keep away pests. And I thought, well, okay, good deal. And I sprinkled that out in the garden and then made the whole, I'm afraid my neighbors just were cursing me because it made the whole world smell like mothballs. It was bad.
Yeah, and they actually are selling a product, at least last year. I'm not sure I've seen it this year. It's actually a product that had that same kind of stuff in it with corn cobs that you're supposed to put out on your lawn to keep the mosquitoes away. Well, it keeps everybody else away, too, because it's that horrible
You don't want to go out there, so you're not going
to
get
that's
bit.
That's right, so you don't have to worry about mosquitoes, but at any rate.
Yeah. So, I don't know if the coffee grounds did anything.
They're great for compost. I mean, I put them in the compost pile, and they make great compost. So, I certainly would use them, but I wouldn't necessarily say they're going to add a whole lot of fertility to the soil.
Okay. Next up is Urbana, line number 3. Hi.
Hello there.
Yes.
I'm wondering about nimbleweed, orchard grass, or whatever the correct name for it is. If I got that in the yard, how do I get rid of it?
Yeah, nimbleweed is that really kind of fine textured
grass. Fine, lacy stuff. Crawled all over.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a perennial, so the plants come back every year, which you've probably figured that out by now.
Like Creeping Charlie?
Yeah, those patches have seemed, nimbleweed seems to have done quite well over the last few years because I've gotten a lot of people commenting about it.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a perennial, we really don't have any good things that will selectively kill it and not also kill our grass, our good grass.
Right.
So you have a few options. You can dig it out, and for small patches, that may work out fine for you. Just sort of dig those patches out, and then this is a good time to reseed or resod. You could do that.
Okay.
If you do choose, you certainly can use one of the non-selective herbicides, like the glyphosate, Soldier's Roundup, Cleanup.
Roundup.
Right. And you actually spray just those areas because it's non-selective. It doesn't know the difference between a good plant and a bad plant.
Just kill the nimble.
Right. And then wait till it dies. And then once the nimbleweed dies, then you can go ahead and reseed or resod actually right into those areas.
Okay.
So this would be a good time to do that as long as the nimbleweed is still doing its thing. And it should be still growing quite well. It's a warm season grass, so it tends to do better in the warmer part of the season.
It just seems once it gets started, it's kind of hard to.
I know you're right.
Keep track of it.
You're right, and so it's probably best to sort of get rid of those small patches early.
Okay, yeah, thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. Back to someone in Chicago. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
One house plant question. Then I'll ask the easy one first. Are salvias perennials or annuals?
Depends on what salvia you're talking about.
Okay. This is your typical 6-in-a-pack salvia.
And it's the red or
one red,
maybe
one
lavender?
Purple.
Okay. Those are not hardy.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll reseed themselves and you get them to pop back up again, but they're not hardy. They're considered annuals.
Okay. Then this is the house plant question.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dumb cane, a Diffenbach,
mm-hmm.
and you know how they grow those long, it's old, and it's got this mm-hmm. long, long trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, shoots came up, leaves came up from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get rid of all that trunk. I have about 4 feet of trunk, and if I cut off the crown, I know I can start that again in water, but then I'll still have at least 3.5 feet of trunk left. Can I cut that into chunks and either put it in water or put it in soil?
Okay. probably, I'm not sure if you can, with no leaves on it, you're talking about?
No leaves.
I'm not sure how much success, I mean, you certainly can try it. I would doubt that it would work well for you,
you think,
to be honest with you.
Just toss it.
Yeah, I probably would, to be honest with you. I mean, and you can also do, and I don't know if you've tried to do it in water and stuff before, you actually can do some air, what's called air layering. I don't know if you've seen that before.
No.
Right, where you actually can go ahead and make a new plant just by right on the stem. It's kind of hard to explain. I'm sort of using my hands here, which you can't tell. It actually, and it's a really very successful way of getting plants.
Is that when you cut it on the trunk on a slant?
You just right. You just sort of make a small nick in it. Actually, put a little moist sphagnum moss, a little saran wrap or whatever plastic wrap around it, and then eventually it'll grow roots, and then you can just cut that off. So it's a pretty successful way of getting.
So on the long trunk, I don't cut off the crown yet. I wait to cut off the crown. Then on that long trunk, I make diagonal slices along the trunk, and how many, how far apart, like a foot apart?
Well, usually we just do one for the top part. Usually you just do a cutting for the top part because that's the quality part.
Okay, so all this, these 3 feet of trunk from the bottom up is not quality.
Normally correct.
Okay.
Unless that's the way you want, you know, if that's the way you want it. But they do get so leggy that usually that's what people end up doing is to bring them back down again that way. I've never tried to do it, you know, having several. I suppose you probably could. It might be worth a try just to do several of them. You may find they do go ahead and root.
Okay.
But I would leave plenty of room in between each one, like at least 8 inches or so.
Because
make sure there's
been,
several buds.
It's been really easy just to cut off the crown and put that in water. And it
well,
roots.
if that's worked really, well for you, then that's probably simpler in the long run.
It is.
Yeah, but okay. You'd try the other ones using it that way. You might find they go ahead and bud out. Just look for the buds. Make sure there's plenty of buds on there.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good luck.
Very good. Next caller is Urbana. This is line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Can you overwinter ornamental millet?
I haven't seen anybody do that. I guess my thought is it would probably, because it's, as far as I know, it's truly an annual.
Yeah.
So I doubt if you're going to find that it's much, there's a much quality even the next year if you do end up keeping it.
How about catching seeds from the grass heads, the seed heads?
They're probably not going to come true. You'll just get millet. It's probably not going to be the purple or the fancier type. They generally don't come true to type just from the seeds themselves.
So I'm enjoying dump.
It's pretty much an annual plant. You certainly can try it. I've seen people certainly do it with the purple fountain grass, but that's more of that's a perennial. Mm-hmm. The millet, I have a feeling with it being an annual, that's probably just going to, you know, pretty well grow itself out like a true annual.
Okay. Thank
you. Yeah, they're pretty. They've been quite popular the last year.
Okay.
Bye.
Charleston is next. Line two. Hello.
Yes, two questions. I'm a an orphan plant guy, and I find these things in our local leaf drop and where people, our house being torn down and such as that, and I'll salvage what I can. And I wonder, do I introduce diseases then into the other plants that I have, which is fairly massive, but is there danger in that?
So you're actually going to sites and then digging them up. You're not, like, getting the ones that are, like, left over at the garden centers or whatever?
I actually go to a site, you know, where houses come down or the leaf drop where people will give me things now and then. But that's usually the source of the orphan is when it's going to be dug out, you know, and cleared with a site.
Right. So it's not that the plant's dying or something.
Oh, no,
you end up with them.
Yeah, they're always healthy.
Then I'm not sure I necessarily worry about it too much. Now, obviously, depending on what variety is, we certainly see with things like, you know, some of the daylilies and peonies and stuff, some of them do have more of a tendency to get some leaf spot diseases. You may see that, but you probably notice that anyway in your other plants if they were truly going to get it. So I wouldn't worry about that too much. I'd probably be a little bit more concerned about weeds. I will tell you a story on myself in that I did the same thing one time. I actually dug up some irises one time, and this was years ago, and I didn't really pay attention when I replanted them, and that's how I got Creeping Charlie. came in with that, because that's exactly, I could tell exactly that's where the source was, because the Creeping Charlie sort of moved out from there. So I would, as you're digging things up, I would probably wash the roots off or really make sure that you do a good job, much better than I did, of making sure that you're not bringing any new seeds in or weeds or something like that. I'd be more concerned about that.
Well, I have, the other question is, I have two tulip poplars, the one 5 years old, the other about seven. And they both now have a leaf mold of some sort. And this is the first year for it. And that's why I wondered if I brought something to
land.
But they're, well, I've cut one limb, which I wish I hadn't done. But the it's up in the tree, on the older tree. It's clear near the top now. The other five-year-old, it is beginning to... Do you have any knowledge of that?
There's spots on the leaves? Is that
no,
what you're saying?
It's moldy looking, and it turns... dark green, and then a gray-looking mold, and then the leaf curls up and dies. I took a sample to the conservation people, and they're going to look into it, but I thought I might get a jump on it.
Right. I certainly have seen leaf spot diseases on those plants, the tulip poplars.
Yeah.
You know, other than powdery mildew, you know, certainly. But your, to go back to your question, did you bring something in? Probably not from your other plants.
Okay, probably.
That probably wasn't the source. We're probably looking. This is a great year for diseases. So I think if someone was a pathologist, they should be very, very happy this year. Because we've had, you know, the cool, moist evenings have been perfect for disease problems. So I feel it.
Hopefully it won't kill the trees. But that's the only thing.
Right. Now, are you here in Champaign-Urbana? Or
Coles County, down south, about 50 miles.
Right. Now, they do have a Master Gardener program there in Coles County, so you may want to check out your Coles County Extension Office, University of Illinois Extension Office, and, you know, take a sample to them. They certainly can help you out with that, too.
Well, I'll just kind of wait on then.
Yeah.
Thank you, dear.
Right.
All right.
Good luck.
Let's see. We'll go on here to Indiana, line number three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You might be able to help to settle a domestic problem.
Uh-oh.
I'm of the school, I'd like to have the entire yard of wildflowers, but there's ordinances, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So moved into a place a little over a year ago, and on one side was a large hedge. I don't know the name of it. It looks like all the hedges everybody else has around here. A lot of people keep them clipped, you know, not taller than 4 feet and with a box silhouette. These were quite tall, and elderly people lived here, and they, you know, didn't have a wherewithal to take care of everything. And it was probably a good 10, 11 feet tall. Well, my wife decided to go in and slash and burn because they always grow back. Well, it does, but it's what I call sucker limbs. They get come out and get a lot of leaves, and they just fall over. So now she has her eye on a lilac bush. A grape arbor, which you know, I've been cutting back because it's a healthy fella.
Right.
And there's a rose that's sort of grown wild, and some of its branches are approaching 9 feet now. And I just wanted, you know, how far back can you cut these things so that you don't essentially ruin, you know, their look, if there's a rule of thumb, because the hedge is, you know, it's you know, ugly. But I don't say those things.
Yeah, but I will tell you that it probably, you know, because of that first year that you pruned it back and it hadn't been pruned for so long, that's probably one of the reasons why you're getting this tremendous sucker growth. I think if you keep it pruned on a regular basis, you'll find that it doesn't do every single year.
How far back do you prune these sucker limbs?
Well, probably this time of year, I probably just so they're still looking halfway decent, you can actually cut them back fairly.
Yeah, and they're drooping, you know, like, say, far. 2 or 3 feet up, they droop over and they're touching the ground.
Well, then I'd go ahead and cut that you know, I'd really cut
there's
them back so
the
that they're looking,
that
still
vertical,
looking good.
You know, okay.
Right, and then I would think from then on, then you may want to do, like, every couple of years, make sure you prune
them. What
about
the lilac bush and the roses?
As far as the lilac, now normally with lilacs we'd actually take out the old growth on those to keep the new stuff coming up. We actually want a few suckers on those.
Okay, so the new stuff would be the less tall.
Right, and it's smaller around and that kind of thing. Normally we would do that right after they flower.
Right after they flower, they've already done that. So I'm,
right because
well, see, I mean, I just noticed the eye is you know starting. She's starting to talk about them. And each one has a nice, you know, thing to look through it, you know, from windows and stuff. And I just want to make sure, try to get it so that we won't have these drooping things touching.
Right, and certainly with lilacs, some people keep them as trees, more like a tree. You certainly don't have to take it.
You know, I just looked at it again, and it looks like it's grown a foot since springtime. Anyway,
yeah,
it's over 10 feet because I know about, you know, a rim on a basketball.
Right. And well, so you certainly can do some heading back on those.
Okay.
We're getting kind of late because they're gonna be setting their flower buds here. So I'd
be
a little bit concerned.
Would it be best to wait until another time?
I'd wait till next year after they flower.
Okay, and what about the roses?
And the roses, you can certainly prune those back. They don't have to be. Are these, do you know what kind these are?
No, I know that they're healthy, but they have undoubtedly some kind of mold
Black spot.
on a lot of the leaves, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not real powdery, but it does discolor it. But it seems to be, I mean, it's been fighting with the arbor pretty well, 50-50.
Right. Does it bloom all the time?
Yes, it bloomed, yeah. They're quite beautiful. They're dark red.
Okay, well, if it's a rebloomer and continuing to bloom, then it must be blooming on new wood. So those you can pretty much prune back any time.
Okay.
So that's yeah. Edwina
okay,
Scissorhands.
Thanks a lot. Now I just have to get subtle.
Thanks very much.
Good luck.
We've got about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's on the program each month when things are really growing, and we give you the chance to call and ask about lawn and garden care. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Way back at the beginning of the program, we did talk a little bit about the fact that this now is a good time of year if you want to establish a new lawn. This is the time to do it. Anything other than what we've talked about so far that you would want to say about them?
Probably the first thing, which we've already kind of touched on a little bit, is just if you have weed problems, especially perennial weed problems, take care of them first. You know, deal with that. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those, like Creeping Charlie, you can't just till over the top of them, you know, till them in thinking that's going to kill them off, because it won't. You just produced more is really what you've done. So somehow you need to make sure that you control that. And watering, that's going to be the biggest thing, because you really, luckily we've got a little cooler temperatures here, but it has to be kept moist. So you're going to do a lot of light sprinkling, a lot of heavy sprinkling. Once it comes up, once the grass seed comes up, then you'd want to do more thorough watering. But, you know, right now you just would be, you know, on a regular basis, just keeping that top surface moist. So that's real important. And get good grass seed. I think that's the biggest thing. Sometimes people sort of, you know, I don't want to spend that much money, so I get a really cheaper seed. Well, you kind of get what you pay for. So get those combinations, those blends, mixes, where there's several different types of grasses in there and different cultivars in there. And in the long run, it's worth that extra money to do that kind of thing. So don't get too cheap on seed. Yeah. I actually went to a place one time, and it was called Green Grass Seed was the label. Green Grass Seed. Green grass
well, that's
seed.
What you want.
That's what you want.
Green
and
grass.
And as I looked at it farther on the label, it was annual ryegrass, which is fine for a real quick grass, but it's a horrible long-term grass. So, but it was cheap.
Well, it does seem to me, and now having talked with you about these things, looking at what you get in some of the various mixes, there can be a real big difference between, you know, how many cultivars you get in there and what you get. And, you know, there was one point I had bought some seed that seemed to be pretty good that was a mix of four different cultivars of Kentucky bluegrass and a minimum of other junk, because also some of them say, well, you know, there's no telling what's in here. There's a certain percentage of it. It could be weed seed. Yeah. It could be, you know, whatever. It was. But they do have to
tell you on that label.
And this was really nice. And unfortunately, then I went back later and they decided, no, they weren't going to sell grass seed anymore at this place. But anyway, that was, I think, the best one I thought that I had found.
Yeah,
and it did pretty well.
Yeah,
so.
Find those. Because then especially if you have a disease problem, it's not going to wipe out the whole lawn, more than likely, because some of the other cultivars are going to be more resistant.
So. All right. Champagne is next. Line one. Hello.
Yes, hi. Mm-hmm. I stepped away from the radio for a while, so I don't know if you covered this, but you were talking about cutting back some plants, and I was wondering about a Rose of Sharon that is totally out of control. Should I wait till spring to cut that back, or can I start now?
Well, most of them that I've seen are blooming right now,
yes.
So I think I would probably enjoy the flowers, personally, unless you really, it's driving you crazy and you want to do something. You can certainly do some light pruning on them. But Rose of Sharon are one of those, they bloom on old wood and new wood both, and so you can pretty much do it anytime. Pretty tough shrubs for the most part. If you were going to do major pruning, I would say I'd probably wait until spring to do that, but certainly can do some, you know, heading back where you just want to make them a little bit shorter, that kind of thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
All right. And next is Urbana and line two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I think that I would like to try growing a climbing vine, you know, to like cover up an outside wall.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular type that does especially well at that? And is there any particular kind of location it should be in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is this full sun?
Yeah, it'd be like either west or southwest facing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it depends on, and now, is this a wall of your house or?
Yeah, an outside wall of the house.
Okay, now I am going to warn you a little bit because these usually you want some sort of lattice work or something that they'll actually grow on, because depending on what kind of surface you have there, especially if you have vinyl siding or something, a lot of these will actually, they have these little suction cup things on some of them, and they'll actually leave that, you know, if you ever take that vine off, it actually leaves all those little things on there, and it's really hard to get off. So I'm going to warn you a little bit with some of these. There may be some issues there where it might actually kind of, it's aesthetic for the most part, but it might actually damage the surface. So I'm going to warn you a little bit on that.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to do, there's certainly all kinds of vines. If you just want something that's just going to take over, certainly things like, you know, Boston Ivy and Trumpet Creeper and all those are just going to absolutely go wild and take over if that's what you're looking for. If you want something a little bit more sedate, then I'd probably go with something like, you know, certainly even some of the clematis or clematis are going to do fine if they're kept moist in those kind of areas. And those would be much more subdued, and you'd probably need some sort of lattice work or something certainly for that.
I got a very large, plain white wall, but it is vinyl, and I was just thinking, well, that'd be a neat way to dress it up.
Right. I still would probably think about some sort of lattice work or something like that rather than having it go directly on the wall. And some of them need lattice work, like clematis just isn't going to, like, stick to the wall. They just don't do that. Climbing hydrangeas are great vines, wonderful. Climbing hydrangea.
Climbing hydrangea.
And they're another one. It's a little slow to get established, but once they get going, they're absolutely beautiful. That might be another one that really is a great vine.
Okay.
So hopefully that gives you at least a few ideas. But I'd look into really that whatever you pick, make sure you look into whether it does need a trellis or not, and whether it might leave it a little bit of something behind on your wall.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you to another Urbana person here, line number three. Hello.
Hello. The earlier caller's questions about the lilacs had me wondering a couple of things. I grew up in a farmhouse in northern Illinois that had these 100-year-old lilacs. They're just wonderful. Actually, they're older than that. They still are putting up shoots, and mm-hmm. I've tried to transplant them before, and I don't think I got big enough root balls or whatever, but I couldn't do it. Are there any tips you can give me? Or is there a cultivar that has the wonderful smells of the old-fashioned lilacs that I should look for?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly, you know, one of the things you can do is just select those particular ones. And they usually, the catalogs or wherever you get them, are usually very good at telling you that these are the old-fashioned types or something along those lines, and will tell you that they're more fragrant or whatever. So usually you can get those still. For those particular ones, if you're really trying to get that particular one, which if that's really what you want, you may find you can't find that if it's really that old, or certainly is that old. What you might want to do is if you have a stem that's fairly easy to sort of pull down.
They still send out these little like branches a foot or two away from the plant. And for sentimental reasons, I would really kind of like to try to get at least one of those.
Right. And so I'm certainly digging those up, but I know you've tried that and maybe had not had the greatest of success. What you can do if the stem itself is fairly succulent, you can actually sort of bend those over a little bit. And if it's fairly long, this works out really well. You can bend it over. You just make a little nick on the underside and you actually pin it down to the ground. And what will happen is eventually in that spot, usually takes, you know, probably the next season, but it will actually form roots right there.
Oh, that's a fantastic
And
idea.
So it's still attached to the mother plant, so it still gets nutrients and stuff from the mother plant, but we'll go ahead and send out roots. So that might be, you might try that as well.
And just a little nick then, you know, a quarter inch or...
Right. You don't want to go all the way through. You just want to sort of scar that stem a little bit so there's a little bit of a wound, and you're going to have to pin it down somehow with a, I don't know, a piece of metal or something, you know, some wire or something that's going to help to pin that down so it stays in the soil. And then the top part of the shoot then goes back out again. Does that make sense? Kind of like a serpentine.
Like if I used a couple tent stakes and something pulling them down with
sure.
it, that might work.
Sure.
Oh, thank you for your
You can
suggestion.
Do that, and then next year it should have roots on it.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, good luck. Well, we're just about the point where we're going to have to finish. One thing that you did mention is that if you want to divide iris, now you can be doing that?
Yeah, this is a great time to be doing that. If you have irises, and as you divide them, you know, really look them over. This is the time of year then iris borer is going to show up, and boy, you can just tell because the rhizomes themselves are just all mushy of sorts. And so this is a good time to go ahead and think about doing that. And it's one of the few that we actually do transplant in August or when it's hot and dry.
Okay.
Or normally hot and dry.
Anything else at this time of year that you can be dividing like that?
Well, certainly we're getting in the point now where you could divide some perennials. I'd probably wait a little bit later in the season, but don't forget about a vegetable garden. You know, we usually don't talk about vegetables, maybe starting a vegetable garden, but there's a lot of them that you can start even late season like this and actually have a fall garden. So for a lot of things like lettuce and a lot of the leafy type crops, you certainly could plant those. It's not too late to do snap beans. So don't give up on having a vegetable garden. You still can certainly do that. And things like carrots and stuff actually get sweeter as it gets cooler. So it's a good idea to even think a little bit about your vegetable garden.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being here. Sandy will be back again next month, and we'll take your question. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. In the meantime, if you're within the viewing area of our television station, WILL-TV, we have a program on Thursday nights called Illinois Gardener, and it's on at 7. It's a live show, and every week there's a different group of plant people on the program, and you will also have the opportunity to call in with questions on that show, like this one. So that's another source. And, of course, wherever you live, look in your phone book and look for your local extension person, and there will be somebody like Sandy who can also help you out with these kind of questions.
Mm-hmm. It's usually listed under your county, or it might be listed under University of Illinois.
Okay. And also, if you have internet access, Extension has a website, and there is a lot of lawn and garden information on that, too.
Yeah, we have all kinds of information. It's www.urbanext, as in urbanext.uiuc.edu.
Okay, very good. We'll see you next month.
Mm-hmm.